Coming to you via the internet and your friends at PipesMagazine.com, it's the Pipes Magazine Radio Show. If you think listening to our show's host for 1 hour a week is bad, try being married to him. Now, I invite you to sit back, relax, the smoking lamp is lit. Here's your host, Brian Levine.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Pipes Magazine Radio Show. Yes, the sometimes irreverent, sometimes educational, but always entertaining weekly pipe smoking broadcast. And I am your host, Brian Levine, coming to you from the recording studio built here in my house just outside of Orlando, Florida. And it's nice and warm and humid, and I love it. And anyway, getting the pool worked on today. Can't wait. All right, so I'm done with that. Okay, all right, back to the show. And this week in Pipe Parts, we continue the pipe tour with what I'm calling the Red Sottos. And we'll talk about those. And there's a picture posted on the show page of the five pipes I'm going to talk about. And then we get an exciting deep dive into Oriental tobaccos with Jeremy Reeves. And this was a lot of fun. And I even learned something in it. So, you're going to like that. Music by request, mailbag, and a rant. A rant on me. Probably a two-part rant, yeah, on me. All that coming up on this week's episode of the Pipes Magazine Radio Show. I really hope that you guys that are heading off to the Muletown Pipe Show this upcoming weekend have a great time. I am going to, I'm going to miss it. But just isn't in the cards this year with all the with the move going on. However, with the move going on, if you are coming to the Orlando area, let me know. If you're coming through here this summer or spring or whatever, let me know. Get together for a pipe if the timing works out. If you want some advice on where you can smoke your pipe, let me know. Reach out to me. And while you're doing that, make sure and check out VegasPipeShow.com for all information on the Las Vegas International Pipe Show. And I understand that there are now more rooms available at the hotel for the Chicago Pipe Show coming up April 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th. Yeah, looking forward to that. That one I get to go to, so hope to see a lot of you there. All right, let's get the show rolling. So everybody sit back, relax, fire up a bowl. Thank you all for tuning in, and here we go.
There's nothing quite like working in my shop or smoking my genuine Missouri Meerschaum corncob pipe, an American legend since 1869. It's the coolest, smoothest pipe I've ever owned. Check them out at corncobpipe.com.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Reeves, head blender of Cornell and Deal. We know pipe smoking is a personal journey. That's why our small team of blending and production experts take a personal approach in every step, preparing tobacco products just for you. We source top quality leaf through the personal connections we've made around the world, hand blend that leaf, and carefully package each tin. Each product, from special releases like our small batch line to our most popular mixtures like Autumn Evening, are made right here in South Carolina by professionals dedicated to providing the finest of smoking experiences. Lighting up a pipe is an exploration through evolving flavors, thoughts, memories, and even dreams. From our hands to yours, Cornell and Deal tobaccos are your passport for that voyage, provided by people who, like you, value the journey.
And we are back on the Pipes Magazine Radio Show and continuing the tour of my pipe collection, pipe assortment. Yeah, you know, the pipes that I smoke, not the the Disney ones. There's one that I smoke on a regular basis. The rest are just part of that collection. But these are the pipes that I actually smoke on a regular basis. And so we start off in the Smio Sato section. And if those of you that came to the Las Vegas International Pipe Show, you saw all the Satos that I had at that time. But we're going to start off with the five that I call the Red Sottos. Now, one of them's brown, but the reason I call these the Red Sottos is because, first of all, Sato does a red pipe stain better than anybody else. The only one that I've ever seen come close was Ernie Markle when he would do some red. And red is really a hard color to work with for a pipe maker because it's multiple layers and multiple layers, and then it starts to get really deep and heavy. The first one in the bottom of the picture that we posted on the radio show page is the first Sato, and it's the little tiny bent brandy. It's the first Sato pipe that I bought. It was really my first pipe that I bought as a foray into, something that wasn't a straight Lavat or a Lumberman or a Canadian. This pipe came to me as part of my, it was my Christmas present to myself. The first Christmas that I was working at smokingpipes.com, and, it was a bit of an extravagance for me, and I had to wait for it to be on the website for 2 weeks before I could buy it and get my discount. And even at that, it was an extravagance. It was like $400+, with my discount. But it's just a little compact red brandy, and it's got the sui shoe in it. And this is the pipe that started my fascination with Satos. I'll also tell a quick story about this pipe because this is the pipe that I discovered really likes the straight Virginias and is one of my warm weather breakfast humid pipes. It just smokes them sweeter to the point where last year at the Chicago Pipe Show, I cleaned up this pipe. I brought this for Fred Hanna to try, and I told Fred, I said, I've reamed and cleaned it and sanitized it, and I want you to smoke your favorite Virginia in it and tell me that it doesn't smoke sweeter. And sure enough, it does. And it's just something with the, to me, it's something, as with all these red and the one brown pipes, it's something with that red stain and a combination of Sato's Urushi lacquer that just makes these five pipes that I'm going to talk about all smoke a little bit sweeter. So, but first we start off with the first Sato pipe, and that is this little bent brandy. The second one is kind of it's more of a squashed saucer. It's got a little bit of an angle on the bowl and a little bit of, on the shank and a little bit of a flat bottom to the shank. So it's got a whole bunch of stylings going on. Not exactly the deepest bowl, maybe about an inch long, so an inch deep bowl. So it really is the same size tobacco chamber as in the brandy. But what I particularly love about this pipe is that when I met Sato in 2006 or 2007, he was very excited to see this pipe because he'd only done this shape maybe a couple of times, and he was excited to see that I had it. It does get smoked. Not as often as the little brandy does. And then the next one is kind of an ovaled Dublin, traditional Sato Dublin shape. And instead of being perfectly round, it's wider from front to back and narrow on the side. So it's kind of got that opera pipe ovaled shape to it. And again, just another smaller, bold, red stained, and it gets smoked fairly frequently because it is easy to pack and load, but it's about a 35 minute smoke for me. And it's just an oddly shaped, again, this is Sato being Sato in that he's paying homage to the traditional shapes, but then adding a little Japanese flair to it. The fourth one is a very small sandblasted bent brandy. And this one I keep in the red collection because I've got a couple other sandblasts in this same color, but because of the bowl size, it just gets dedicated to those morning Virginias. And this one gets smoked fairly frequently during the summertime because it is really comfortable. It's just a small bent bamboo brandy, no sui shoe on it. So it's one of the few that I still have in my collection that does not have sui shoe. But because of the redness, the red color to it, and the sweetness of the way it smokes, it stays in the collection. And again, I think it's one of four or five that I have that do not have the Suishu inlay, which is the little multicolored thing that Sato did on the stems. The last one is a very long egg, and it's a long shanked egg, and this pipe is more on the brown side, but it does have that sweetness. It does have a bigger bowl to it, so it will get some of the Virginia Periques in it. But this pipe has a bit of a story to it, and in that I saw it go up on Smoking Pipes. I saw them introduce it as a brand new pipe, and I really loved it. Could not afford it at the time. I couldn't pull the trigger on it as a brand new pipe. And then fast forward about a year, and the person that bought it had, let me put it to you politely, had some issues with the pipe and had really abused, the pipe got abused. It was, it's got a chart of the rim that just can't be fixed. It had some, had a little bit of a hole going on the inside of the bowl. Long story short, it ended up back at Smoking Pipes, and I happened to have, they told me that they got an estate one in, but it was in bad shape, and they sent me pictures, and then I was going to be there in a week or two, so they held on to it, and I came and looked at it, and I made a deal for it, and then I started nursing it back to health. And the way you nurse a pipe back to health that's got some holes in the inside the bowl and is possibly burning out and stuff is a very long, painful process of leaving ash in there and building up the cake and leaving ash and building up the cake and leaving ash and building up the cake and not tamping on that side or not tamping in that area, not using not hitting that area with the lighter. But over a year or so of doing that very carefully over time, I got the bowl back to just about even, and there's nothing that can be done with the rim. The pipe is absolutely beautiful except for the rim, and it smokes really well. It is a nice, decent-sized bowl for me, too. So there's the five red Satos, and again, you know, we'll go through the collection over the, you know, over the year, probably, four or five pipes at a time. Comments or questions, you can always email me, brian@pipesmagazine.com, and in just a moment, my conversation on Orientals with Jeremy Reeves.
This is Internet Radio.
For over 150 years, Peterson has welcomed all pipe smokers. It's the preferred choice of the thinking man and the everyman alike, and our workshop too is a place of hospitality and warmth. Hi, I'm Glenn Whelan, and for me, Peterson is a family tradition I've known since my childhood. My dad, Tony Whelan Jr., worked at Peterson for 53 years and has been my home since 2003. From sweeping our factory on a Saturday morning, to managing our store, to now steering our international distribution, I've seen the craftsmanship poured into each Peterson pipe. It lives in Jason's discerning eye as he handcrafts our silver accents and in Wojciech's able hands as he carves our rustications. It abides in Willie's grading and in Warren's papering. Peterson has welcomed us as contributors to its legacy, and it's a welcome we always extend to you. Cade Mila Falja, 100,000 welcomes, wherever you come from, whosoever you be.
We're back on the Pipes Magazine radio show, and for a bonus, instead of just a short little Ask the Blender, we get the blender for a whole featured guest segment. So, head blender of Cornell and Deal Tobacco, Jeremy Reeves, welcome to the Pipes Magazine radio show.
Yeah, thank you so much, Brian. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here, because this is going to be fun, all right? This was prompted, and I can't remember who asked me about this, but years ago, I did a bit of a vertical tasting of about seven different varietals of Oriental tobaccos.
That must have been fun.
It was fun. It was painful. Because it was just the straight varietals.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you can go back into the archives. I think that was probably 2012, 13 or 14, somewhere back there. But what I want to do with you, because you are the head blender, is just kind of go through the different Turkish or Orientals, you know, get definitions of them, and what you experience out of each one, and what you think what they add to blends, what they take away from blends, and so on, and why you use each one. So how does that sound?
That sounds good to me.
Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
All right. Can we first come up with a definition? Are they Orientals or are they Turkish? Because they don't all grow in Turkey.
Well, so colloquially, we have referred to Oriental tobacco generally as Turkish. And sort of technically that's true because most of the areas where these types of tobaccos are grown were at one time a part of the Turkish Empire. It's not technically true now since Turkey makes up a smaller portion of that landmass. And these tobaccos are still grown in these areas that used to be part of the Turkish Empire. So that's sort of why we have used the terms interchangeably. But Oriental is probably the more proper term. On the leaf side, we tend not to talk so much about Burley and Virginia and even Oriental as we do about sun-cured, air-cured, and flu-cured. And some folks on the leaf side of the industry also refer to Oriental tobacco simply as aromatic tobaccos or aromatics.
So basically what you're saying is depending on who you're talking to, there could be six or eight different definitions of what we're about to talk about.
That is correct. It wouldn't be a conversation about tobacco if you didn't have to first learn what everyone's terminology actually is. But I think that more often than not, when you talk about Oriental tobaccos, this kind of clarifies things a little bit. We also should note a little caveat for Latakia that it is technically an Oriental, but because it goes through the fire curing process that turns it into Latakia, we think of Latakia and talk about Latakia as being sort of a separate category.
Yeah.
So usually when people are talking about Orientals, they're referring to tobacco that has been grown in areas like Turkey or Macedonia or Greece or the Balkan Isles, and that has been sun-cured.
So we're basically talking about the area that surrounds the Aegean Sea.
Correct. Yeah.
And when we call them Orientals, really a lot of them are grown on the European continent over in Greece and Macedonia and that part, but we just call them Orientals anyway.
Correct. That is correct.
So we're in a land of definitions without definitions, but we have definitions for what we definitively know.
Right.
Yeah. And I'll remind people that, Latakia, Cavendish, and Perique are technically processes that happen to tobacco, not tobacco that's grown that way.
That's correct as well. That is correct as well.
And aromatics aren't grown with cherry and vanilla and stuff like that. So,
nope. Much as we would love to be able to do that, I don't think we've figured out a way to yet.
Yeah. So if we can, let's kind of go through. We'll go through the ones that I've got here on my desk so that I can sniff and smell them while you talk about them. And I thought we'd just go in alphabetical order. And the first one I've got is Basma. And yeah. So your thoughts on Basma, why, what do you pick up when you're smoking it? What does it do?
Sure. So I find Basma to be really, really pleasant with a lot of tea-like character, which I think is actually a pretty good descriptor that could be applied to most of the Oriental tobaccos that I've had the opportunity to smoke. But one of the things that I find interesting about Basma is that it has these sort of floral and tea elements to it, but it doesn't have a whole lot of sweetness. So most typically in Cornell and Deal tobaccos where Oriental is used, we're actually using a mixture of Izmir and Basma. Basma, I think, really brings out a lot of the savory side of floral and herbaceous notes, and tea-like notes, but it doesn't have much in the way of sweetness. And so we blend it with Izmir because Izmir brings that sort of matcha green tea kind of flavor, particularly when you're using one of the higher primings, as we do. But it brings a little bit of a cream and citrus and honey sort of sweetness to that flavor profile. I find Basma to be a little less sweet and more savory in its herbaceousness and in the way that it presents with floral elements.
So with the Basma, if you are working on a Virginia, on a fairly, you know, a predominantly Virginia based blend, you might use Basma to draw down a little bit of the sweetness and accent the sweet notes with that, with again, that floral or that, I'm kind of getting like that dry, tea taste just by smelling it.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. So you're using it to kind of balance it some, you know, sometimes, and now you got me sniffing at this and I'm thinking, yeah, all I want to do is go get a pot of, you know, go get a cup of tea, but it's hot down here, so I won't do that. Before we go any further, is it safe to say that all these Orientals are in the burly range of leaf?
Well, I'm not sure that that's true. I've heard this as well, but my understanding, there's a really interesting book called Making Tobacco Bright. And the woman who wrote it as a part of her thesis. And she started out to write this book about all of the genetic characteristics that make different varieties of tobacco so different, and to learn sort of the history of these different genetic strains. And really quickly she found that wasn't a paper or a book that she could write, because there weren't really a whole lot of genetic differences that anybody could agree on. What seems to be truer is that, like the tea plant, that it's one singular plant, one singular seed, but that plant, depending on the area where it is grown and the way that it is cultivated, can yield really different results in terms of everything from the size of the leaves to the color of the leaves to the end result of the flavor. And so when you look at, you know, green tea is like really young green tea is like matcha. And then you look at black tea is like Ceylon. And then you look at Chinese black tea is like Lapsang Souchong. This is all the same tea plant, but grown in different areas and treated differently during the growing process, and then with different processes applied to the plant after harvesting to cure the leaves. And that's what it's these human factors,
wow,
and geographic factors that yield the differences that are observed. But the plant itself and the building blocks of that plant are all the same basic genetic code. It's the same plant. It's just responding differently to the atmosphere and the environment that it's grown in, and the way that the plant itself is cultivated during its growing time, and then human processes that are applied after harvesting. So I think this is true also of tobacco. And so whether you're dealing with a burly or a Virginia type or an Oriental type, that really this has more to do, these differences have more to do with where that tobacco was actually grown and what the cultural practices around growing tobacco in that region are. And so, for example, with Oriental styles of leaf, this is tobacco grown in an area that is quite different, a climate that's quite different than what we may think of here in the States, or even thinking about like cigar tobacco that you may see grown in the Dominican Republic or in Nicaragua or Honduras, where we expect, you know, big 6 foot tall plants with 22 to 24 leaves that are quite sizable, maybe 16 inches across at their widest point, and 27 to 32 inches long, depending on the portion of the plant that you're looking at. But Oriental tobaccos can have 100 leaves on a plant, and the plant may only get to be about 3 or 3.5 feet tall. The plant is responding to the fact that it's growing in an area that is quite arid. There's not a lot of moisture in the atmosphere. There's not a lot of cloud cover. And so it is subjected to really clear, direct sunlight for its growing period. And so the plant has responded by really focusing a lot more of its energy towards oil production. And it doesn't have the density of nutrition that a larger plant might have, and so it doesn't have a whole lot of nicotine to share around. But the plant is trying to create oil just to block the sun a little bit, and then the smaller leaves are a response that allows each individual leaf on the plant to not be in direct sunlight for quite so long as it would if it were a much larger leaf. And this gives it the opportunity to kind of let each leaf also provide shade to its fellow leaves next to it and below it on the plant. But if you took that seed and tried to plant it here in the States, you're not going to be able to replicate the effects of what we call Oriental tobacco. And in fact, RJ Reynolds, for example, has done all sorts of experiments. They spent a lot of money in the 50s and 60s trying to grow Oriental style tobaccos here in the States. And they took seed from Basma and from Izmir and tried to plant it in Northern California or in Oregon or even in Nevada, and it didn't work. And they tried to transplant these seeds to more traditional growing regions of tobacco, like in Virginia or North Carolina or Tennessee or Kentucky. And what they found was that if the plant could survive, it got bigger, it produced larger leaves, and it didn't produce a result like what they were hoping for to be able to grow Oriental style tobaccos in the States and not have to continue importing from the Orient or from Greece or from Turkey.
So that didn't work. All right, let's take a break right here. When we come back, we'll get back to these varietals that I've got here, but that I'm going to have to process that. So stay with us. We'll be back in just a minute.
Have a look in your tobacco cellar. What do you see? Think of what you smoke, what you age, what you're drawn to in a blend that keeps you wanting more. That's your taste. And whether you know it or not, you've been leading that expedition since you first picked up a pipe. Just by smoking what you like and liking what you smoke. But the funny thing about taste, it changes, and you need a wide selection to accommodate it. We at Smoking Pipes know this, and you know it too. So whether you're searching for a tried and true favorite or a singular boutique mixture, We're here to help you navigate the voyage of your evolving tastes. But you're still at the helm, smoking pipes in faithful service of the hobby.
We are back on the Pipes Magazine radio show with Cornell and Deal's own Jeremy Reeves, and Jeremy's just done a really good job of just not only blending my head, but pureeing it with all that. So thanks. I'm picturing all these plants with 100 leaves sitting out in a desert just waving at me. All right, so we've kind of gone through Bosma and Izmir, which those are the two more popular or more readily available ones for you now?
Yes, that's correct. So variety is like Drama. I've never seen it commercially available in my tenure as head blender at Cornell and Deal. We've never had the opportunity to purchase Drama or Smyrna or Yanige. These are styles of Oriental or rather growing regions that produce these styles that still exist. There's still tobacco grown there, but not in enough volume to justify keeping them separate and have their own sort of green leaf market. And so what ends up happening is that these smaller farms in these regions may produce some leaf that gets used locally, but the vast majority of it is such a tiny amount that it doesn't really budge the needle one way or another to sell as a crop on its own. And so it actually ends up getting mixed into the larger volume of leaf that is grown in the next nearest buying station. And so really what that has meant over time is a homogeneity that has taken place where these distinct varietals don't really represent a large enough market or don't speak to a large enough market to remain distinct. And so instead, since the majority of tobacco is used in cigarette production, yeah, and the majority of cigarette producers are not concerned about a particular variety of Oriental so much as they are about keeping the flavor profile consistent in their cigarette product, that you just end up with an Oriental leaf that is predominantly Izmir, and maybe, you know, a very, very small percentage of it might have been Black Sea Sokum, or might have been Smyrna or Drama or Yanige. But there's just not really a large market for these more specialty types of leaf. The closest commercially available Oriental that I'm familiar with that is similar to Yandige is Prilep. That's Prilep. Prilep does have a delicacy of aroma and sweetness and sort of that curry kind of, like, creamy curry kind of note that I always picked up from Yandige. It's similar, but it's also tough to get in the States, whereas I can usually pretty easily get my hands on Oriental that is either Izmir, which we understand industry side is going to be predominantly Izmir, with some of these other things maybe mixed in here and there where it was available, or Bosma.
All right, so you piqued my interest, and I happen to have some Drama sitting right here in front of me, because that was one of the... When McClellan did their Grand Oriental series, I begged and begged and begged, and they sent me some, you know, 2-3 ounces of each of the straight varietals, so... Mm-hmm. And the Drama compared to the Bosma, the Drama is much more, I guess, more earthy and a little bit, and then you said curry, and I was like, wait a second. So it's got that earthiness to it, and a little bit of that, I'm picturing like a chicken tikka masala without the spiciness.
Sure. It also kind of reminds me of the flavor of olive oil.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go.
And very, then very, very earthy, and there's a bit of a bite, a bit of a spiciness, kind of like if you've ever taken just a spoonful of straight olive oil, maybe from Greece. There's a bit of a spicy element to it, sort of a peppery element to it.
Maybe that's why when the Grand Orientals came out, I liked that little bit of bite to it, because I like that little bit of bite from Perique, or that little bit of punch in there. And now I'm smelling it. Yeah, it's got something behind it. And then the next one you talked about is Yanige, which I happen to have some here, and apparently I liked it because I smoked a lot of it.
Yeah, I really like the flavor of Yanige as well, and that's the one that I actually get more of a curry flavor from. But I'm thinking like curry with cream, or with like coconut milk. There's a sweetness to it, and a complexity to it that sort of comes across to me as creamy.
Yeah, and keep in mind what I'm smelling right now, I've had for 10, 12 years, so who knows what's happened to it since then.
You're getting all sorts of things just from the compounds that have been created through fermentation.
Yeah, but I'm interested. Yeah, but now I'm seeing why these are all considered condimental tobaccos. Even when when you got a fine Turkish cigarette, it wasn't all pure Turkish. It was mixed.
Oh, absolutely.
It was mixed in with something else, because I've smoked these straight and a couple of them almost blew my head off because they're just so overwhelming. But yeah, I could see, so you might want to, if you want to add a little spice, or add a little of this or a little of that, depending on which one you picked from, you could take a blend in a whole different direction.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Unfortunately, as I said, we don't have access to these the way that they were once accessible, and so unfortunately we don't have the opportunity very often to make a blend that, I think I'm going to use this one over this one. But in general, we use Izmir and Bosma for most of our regularly produced blends because of ease of accessibility, and because I like the way that these tobaccos blend together nicely. I think they create a fulsome and wholesome kind of oriental experience. But we do have some older Black Sea Sokhum and some Samson, and we also have some quite old Katerini.
All right,
all of those varietals are really interesting and beautiful.
Well, hang on. Let me open up my Black Sea tin here. It's got the most interesting colors of all of them.
Sure, the color is all over the place.
Yeah,
with deep red and almost black in places, but then you've also got a lighter and kind of sandy yellow tones to it.
And I know there's sometimes when I back in my day, we would throw something in there just to change the color of a blend. So you might take 2% of something that wasn't going to, it wasn't going to change the smoking experience, but it was going to change the way it would look. And this would be interesting. What am I picking up in this? This Black Sea is kind of, it's weird.
It is weird. So I don't know how what we have compares to what you've got. I assume that yours was processed by, well, you said you got it from Mike McNeil.
Yeah.
Can you tell if there's any sort of flavor added, or anything that smacks of the classic McClelland?
No,
flavor profile.
Yeah, there's no ketchup.
Okay. All right. So what I get from our Black Sea Sokum, now this is in bales, 150-pound burlap bales that we have. What I get from it is sort of a smattering of spices, but they taste like they've been toasted. Okay. It makes me think of like if you've ever toasted cardamom and maybe some star anise and some allspice and clove in a pan before grinding it up to use in a dish. That toasted element is something that comes through to me in the Black Sea leaf. But with the age that this leaf has gone through as well, our bales are from 2005.
Yeah, wow.
So it's got this toasty element to it, but then all of it is like just muted and mellowed. The flavors have sort of aged down, and they've softened and mellowed. So you can still taste everything, but it's muted somehow. And I find it kind of has a, I don't even know how to describe this exactly, but it's kind of like if you imagined the flavor having been powdered and sort of puffed into the air and then breathing that in. There's an element to this tobacco that it makes me think of like getting a whiff of powdered sugar or the way that when you bite into a cookie that has powdered sugar, the way that sweetness seems to sort of float in your mouth.
Yeah.
I find that these toasted spice notes have that same sort of quality to it, that the age, I attribute this to the age, that it's mellowed and has sort of created this effect where it seems like everything is just like aerosoled somehow. I'm not describing it well. I don't know how to put this into words exactly.
No, so what I'm smelling is I'm picking up on some of that toastedness, and I'm noticing that not one thing is hitting in one spot. It's all of them are hitting in every spot.
Yes.
And then underneath it, I'm getting a little bit of, and again, this has been sitting in a jar now for 10, 12 years. I'm getting a little bit of a, I want to say like a manure, an earthiness.
Okay, yeah,
to
no, that's it. That's actually a note as well. I don't find it unpleasant. I really enjoy some of the, you know, we call it barnyard flavors, but like that's really what we're talking about, I think, is you know, these deeper, earthier kind of fermenty flavors a lot of times do carry sort of a manure note to it.
Yeah.
I grew up in a little town in New Mexico, and you know, you would go by he would go by some of the farms down there and smell it, and you know, the way that we always said was, oh, it smells like money. But there's something that I find very homey about the smell of a cow pasture.
Yeah. So normally when I'm looking at tobaccos or looking at anything, I instead of more flavors, I get more musical notes.
Okay.
And that one had a lot of bottom end, a lot of bass note in there. And a lot, you know, almost to the point where I'm thinking about rolling a cigarette of it just to smoke it.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah. But before we do that, because I want to keep recording and I don't want to get a head rush, Samsung is the next one that I'm going to pop open. And that's just pretty. It's all bright. It's like a bright orange.
So the Samsung that we have is a bit darker. It's more red. Yeah. But you know, these colors are not inherent to the leaf. They are the result of things that happen during the growing season and the way that that the leaf dried during curing as well, and the temperatures that it got to and the moisture levels that it maintained throughout the curing method. So it's not surprising to me that your sample and what we have here of Samsun or really of any of these tobaccos might be quite different, because all of these things are variables.
Yeah, and it seems to be less distinctive than the others that I've smelled. Yeah,
I find it overall more muted. I don't notice a real bright sort of spiciness to it. I don't notice a pronounced sweetness either.
Yeah.
It is sort of generally recognizable as an Oriental, but it's not as overtly fragrant and aromatic as particularly a younger Oriental generally is, and it's not as fragrant or aromatic as a higher priming of Oriental typically is either.
Yeah, it seems like it's a good, how do I put this politely, but a beginner or entry level Oriental.
Sure, or just a carrier. If you've got more potent leaf, now none of these are potent in terms of nicotine strength, but if you've got tobacco that is a little more bang for your buck in terms of brightness or overtness of flavor, and then you wanted to use something else to carry that, Samsun would be a good carrier, basically a good filler sort of option.
Yeah. It's like a good piece of bread for the sandwich.
Yes. Right. Yeah.
All right. And the last one, cause we're going a little long, but I want to get this in. The last one I have is Catarini.
And Catarini, I think, is just so, it's so vibrant. It's so complex. Yeah. The Catarini that we have is from 2006. And so I know, because tobacco does mellow with age, that this has mellowed. But considering that, I almost can't imagine what it must have been like in 2006, because what I get from it now is really, really bright spiciness.
Yeah.
And at the same time, there's sort of an element that reminds me of like homemade spiced apple cider.
My first sniff of it started to burn and tickle the back of my nose. So mm-hmm. I know it's got some bite to it, but then I was smelling something. I couldn't figure out what it was, but it kind of reminded me of baby powder.
Oh, interesting.
So maybe baby powder and apple cider are the same thing.
Well, ours I find has a tartness to it. It's a naturally occurring thing, but it seems to have a tartness to it and a spiciness to it that always makes me think of fresh pressed apple cider.
I would imagine Catarini paired alongside, and I know this is going to shock people, but I'm going to say it. Catarini with a decent Latakia underneath it would be really a good, would be a wonderful balance.
Oh, absolutely. We did that with one of the blends in the cellar series, Joie de Vivre. And I absolutely love the way that the Latakia and Catarini interplay in that blend.
Yeah. Jeremy, this has been wonderful, and thanks for coming on and doing this. And I was worried at the beginning of this that we wouldn't have enough to talk about, but of course you've got all this information inside your head, and it's just amazing. So thank you very much for coming on and doing this.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity, and it's always nice to talk to you.
And we'll be back in just a minute.
Since its beginnings in 1876, Savinelli has become more than just a pipe factory. It's become a lifestyle. From sourcing the finest Mediterranean briar and partnering with local artisans to acquire unique accents, to expanding their catalog each year with new innovative series, Savinelli produces high-quality Italian pipes that serve as a reflection of your individual tastes. With a portfolio that ranges from rugged designs fit for the outdoors to elegant pieces destined for black tie galas, Savinelli is more than a mark. They're a way to help you make your mark.
This is Internet Radio.
We are back in, 25 plus years, 28 years in the hobby and in the industry. And I got to learn something new doing that show or recording with Jeremy. So there you go. Man, that was fun. All right, for music. So our friend and pipe maker from Holland, Martin Romain, sent this along to me. And it's a guy named Papa Chubby, P-O-P-A, Chubby, C-H-U-B-B-Y. And this is fun. And the song is titled Caffeine and Nicotine. So two of my favorite things. And boy, here it goes.
All right. Try a fast one for you. This is a thing about a song about two of my favorite things in the world. Caffeine, nicotine, in the key of B-flat. Call me in against the sky. Can't be nicotine running right around my brain. Tell me, Tim, why I don't feel right. Slept in 20 days on 20 nights. Belt cup call me, gonna be a star. Gonna get set of titties and a fat cigar. Can't be nicotine running right around my brain.
that was fun. And, you know, that American jazz blues style is really popular in Europe. So thank you to Martine for sending that in.
Oh, my God.
You've got mail.
You bastard.
And remember, mailbag comments and questions, the best way to get them to me is to email them to me, Brian, B-R-I-A-N, at pipesmagazine.com. Or post them on the Pipes Magazine Radio Show page at pipesmagazine.com, just like Dino does every week. And going back to last week's show with Steve Fallon, Dino says, some good ideas on repurposing the remaining tobacco in a tin. Nice to catch up with our friend Steve. That was an engaging conversation you guys had about pipes, tobacco, and the future of our community. I was particularly impressed by Steve's view that the relationship between pipe smoker and pipe carver will add to a heightened satisfaction with that pipe. Yeah. Yeah, you know, that's true for me, too. If I like the pipe maker, boy, it makes the pipe a whole lot better, or the pipe company. And then Dino says, Nickel Creek's Hollywood ending was a wonderfully complex yet lyrical tune. Good choice. Your new home woes remind me of what Rosanna Dana used to say. It's always something. I hope for the best. Thanks for another always entertaining show, Dino. Hey, you're welcome, Dino. And then Captain Kirk says, always enjoy listening to Steve on your show. I have a Frankenstein jar that collects all the odds and ends and last bits of tins and pouches. I call it poor man's tobacco. Sometimes I'll smoke it just for something different. I did an experiment and pressed some of it for a few months. Shameless plug to my YouTube channel. I put together a little video on it. Good luck on all your house projects. We'll miss you at Muletown, but looking forward to sharing a bowl in Chicago. Yeah, it's Captain Kirk 32. Check out his YouTube channel. I was on it once. And then Casey Ghost says, a really wonderful show. Dealing with the dottle doesn't present much of a problem for me. I usually have only two tins open at a time, and they're both vapors. So if I have a little left over in one tin, I just dump it in with the other blend. Steve is just a marvelous interview. He always has a story to tell about everything. I really enjoyed his remarks that you always have your best smokes out of a pipe that you bought directly from the carver. I wholeheartedly agree with him on that. His stories that he told about the undrilled pipe and the open tin of 759 were hilarious. It's in the first, the buyer did nothing wrong. In the second, it was a howl. There isn't anything wrong with that, is there? I've also noticed the decline in value of estate pipes. I will be one of those who will lose money on the changing habits of estate buyers. C'est la vie. Didn't like the music. It seems like ever since Chris Thiele left the group, they have steadily moved their music to the far right of progressive. I know what you mean about buying a used house. I can recall the dishwasher shooting craps after we were in the house a few days. I got filleted alive over that. I got filleted alive over that. After 19 years in the house, I'm starting it needing a new roof, new water heater, a new furnace. It's great being me. Yeah, bless you, Dean. Bless you, Casey Ghost. I wish you all the best on that. Let's see. Mrs. Pickles writes, Steve Fallon's managed to have at least two careers in his lifetime. Hell, same with Brian, too. Hats off, gentlemen. Thanks for the entertaining and informative discussion. You're welcome. And Arrow English said, man, Steve needs to be on the show more regularly or have his own show. His thoughts, banter, and voice are all so engaging. One of the things I found interesting was Steve's thoughts on China. I didn't realize they were producing tobacco at all, let alone at the scale. It would be great to meet and hear more about pipe smoking culture there. And then there's a comment about there's an upcoming one of the seminars in Chicago. In fact, I'm hosting it with some of the guys from China. Will be about the culture of pipe smoking. And then Mrs. Pickles replied, and this is all true. This is in response to China and tobacco. This is something that totally surprised me as well when I started looking into it. Not only does China produce more tobacco than the next six top producing countries combined, the state-owned enterprise that does it, China Tobacco Corporation, even beats out Saudi Aramco as the most profitable company in the world. Even more surprising is that despite the massive scale of tobacco production and consumption in China, There's not a single brand of pipe tobacco, at least none that I'm aware of. There certainly seemed to be some great pipe working there, though. Maybe a China-based member of our forum can share more, or maybe that discussion deserves a separate thread. China has been the number one producer of tobacco for years. And in fact, China has also assisted other Southeast Asian countries and some farms, some growers in Africa to get started just to produce for China. It's great. Always great having Steve on. And it's also really an easy interview because all you have to do is push record and you know something good's going to come out. So comments, questions, email me, brian@pipesmagazine.com. And in just a moment, part one of a two-part rant rave.
We have arrived at 155. Missouri Meerschaum Company has been authentically crafting corn cob pipes continually for 155 years. To celebrate, we're hosting a 155th anniversary celebration on Saturday, September 28th, 2024. There will be ticketed working plant tours, an exhibit on the corncob pipe industry by Skillet Fork Pipe Museum, a live podcast of the Gray Woody Show, a smoking tent for your enjoyment, and so much more. The 155th anniversary celebration will be held in conjunction with Downtown Washington's Fall Festival of the Arts and Crafts, with food, beverages, live music, and over 100 vendors. Visit our Facebook page at Cool Smoking Pipes for fun event updates and more information. Missouri Meerschaum Company, since 1869.
Excuse me, Mr. Collins, but the show is starting. They need you on stage.
Just one minute there, Charlie. I'm placing a bid for this great item on 10bids.com. Ever heard of them?
Oh, sure. The Pipe Collector's Auction site. Well, I just sold some nice things on there myself. Say, you don't see much of that anymore.
Yes, you sure don't, Charlie. But 10bids.com sure has it. They have vintage and luxury tobaccos, pipes, accessories, you name it.
Tom, baby, we need you on stage.
Okay, Ed. Charlie, take over for me, would you please?
You got it, boss.
Visit 10bids.com, the pipe collector's auction site, and sign up for free today.
Hey, Mr. Collins, you won!
Cowboy.
All right, here we go. Rant against me. Yeah, I'm ranting on myself. Why? Well, because I, especially as I'm getting older now, I like a certain amount of routine. I like consistency. I like things to be in the same places. All right. Now, last weekend, we went away for a wedding and we had to fly up there. And this is the first time really that we're kind of leaving the new house and, you know, trying to figure out how to do all that. And, you know, so we got a lot going on and we're packing and we've got a flight to catch. It's in the afternoon, so no big deal in the morning. No rush. But it's a new routine to pack and get ready for a trip in a new environment. OK, we've been in the previous house for 6.5 years. Pretty much had that down to a pattern, not so much a science, but a pattern. And we're packing and we're going through the stages of, all right, we got to get to the airport at this time. We got to get that, you know, doing all that stuff. Right. And you go through this mental checklist of things that you need to bring and, you know, loading up my carry on. And, you know, I'm carrying one of my larger pipe purses. So I got to transfer everything from the smaller bag that I use around town to the one that I'm going to take on the trip. That's big enough to carry water and tobacco and, you know, carry my wallet and everything that I need all in one bag. And I'm doing that, and I'm getting ready. And we get to the airport, and both my wife and I are looking at each other going, I wonder what we forgot. And I'm going through the mental checklist in my head, and I'm thinking, oh, no, got that. You know, got the charger cords and everything. And then I realize, now, I am a dedicated pipe smoker. There is not a day that goes by that I do not smoke a pipe. I had packed everything but a pipe. I had all the tobacco, had all the pipe cleaners, had extra lighters, packed everything but a pipe. So, and FYI, my wife forgot her earbuds for the flight. So, both of us missed something on this. And, so just figuring out the new routine. Now, part two next week on the rave side of that and how I resolved it. All right. Comments, questions, email me, brian@pipesmagazine.com. Apple Podcast and Spotify ratings and reviews are much, much, much appreciated. Keep sharing out the Pipes Magazine radio show to all your friends and family and enemies and everybody around the world. Thank you very, very much to Jeremy for the deep dive into Orientals. Thank you all for tuning in, and until next time.
About the clouds when we're together, just sing a song and think about sunny weather. Happy trails to you till we meet again.
Check around for all your personal belongings and exit the podcast.